You're listening to the Sound of Football podcast, a ride on the football fairground.
Hello and welcome to the 65th thrilling instalment of the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Chris Oakley, and at this point it would be remiss of me not to introduce Terry DeFellin and Graham Sibley, two men who know how to submit a winning bid. Yes, hey. Those eBay auctions don't win themselves, you know. Welcome, Terry and Graham.
Hello.
Hello.
Of course, only one real subject for which we have to discuss tonight, and that is, of course, the announcement only a matter of a few days ago by FIFA of the hosts for the 2018 and 2022 World Cup, namely, as if you hadn't already worked out, Russia and Qatar. So, you will, I'm sure, have worked out by now that there's been much debate about this, much discussion across the web and so on, on your sort of TV programs and newspapers. We're now going to do our bits by thrashing all this out. So first of all, first question, an open question to either of you: how do we feel about the fact that the next two World Cup hosts have been picked seemingly by virtue of money rather than on merit?
Isn't that how they're always picked?
More so this time, I'd argue.
Yeah, well, I think it's just basically that obviously we didn't grease palms well enough, did we?
We didn't.
Must learn to do that a bit better in future, obviously. Obviously, playing by the rules doesn't really do anything. But I doubt whether we played strictly by the rules, you know, considering the fact that we had to suck up to Jack Warner so much. And look how that exploded in their face.
we didn't. I don't think we knew what the rules were, I think that there was clearly a selection criteria, I think that England 2018 clearly naively felt that it was the selection criteria that was written down on a piece of paper saying this is what you need in order to get the World Cup, and I don't think that it's quite works out that way. I think that there are layers. And other things that are going on.
It's like they went into they went into a room where they're hugely unpopular and said vote for us, and no one did.
Yeah, quite so. Yeah, absolutely. And well,
new Labour all over again.
Well, I was just thinking about that. You know, I was thinking it's a shame.
I wonder if
Geoff
Thompson actually voted for England. I mean,
no, he did. He did, and that Cameroon chap that the BBC accused of corruption, he voted for him as well.
Even better.
It's a hire to.
One of the guys that was actually fingered in Panorama voted for us. That just makes it even better, doesn't it?
Yeah.
There's a certain kind of perverse logic about
Mind
that.
Mind you,
wonderful.
I mean, can we actually talk about Panorama? Did either of you guys see it?
No, I didn't bother watching it. I watched the Clásico instead. It was brilliant.
Yeah, well, I actually taped Panorama and watched the Clásico, because, the Clásico was...
Because you're all about the on-demand TV, that's you.
Oh, I'm all about the on-demand TV, so I plussed it, and then I watched it afterwards. And really...
Why didn't you tell me that before the show? Because I did that as well. We could have been talking about the Clásico, for God's sake. Oh, no. I feel such a fool. But no, I did the same, and if I'm honest, I sound so unprofessional, but I just haven't seen it yet. But you know,
well,
I feel like I saw it.
Yeah, in fact, I mean, like, everyone was going off in a hoo-ha all about it, but I think what was the most disappointing thing was the fact that everyone thought it was going to be about the bid and about, like, you know, the Russians' underhand tricks, and there was nothing in there at all about it, and it was this. You're trying to think of his name now. Is it Andrew Jennings? The guy who's been on FIFA's case for the last 12 years. And basically, it was just him like getting a chance to grind his axe again. And it really was, nothing has changed really in the last sort of like 4 years since the last time he showed up doing this. And you know, yes, we all know that you know they're all a big bunch of crooks. But as he was saying, you know, about like all the bungs that they've taken in the past, he said, like, you know, at the time this bribe was made, payments like this weren't illegal in Switzerland. Well, there you go then. That's why they're based there.
Exactly. I mean, this is the other. This is the other thing that. In fairness, though, the Swiss Minister of Sport has apparently announced that that they are looking to close that gap because the anti-corruption laws in Switzerland don't cover sporting institutions, and FIFA laughably is classed as a sporting institution. So that may conceivably change. I mean, I suppose you have to look at, you know, how do you describe a bung or a bribe or something like that. I mean, if you're
a business incentive or something like that?
Exactly. Well, if I was a FIFA delegate looking to provide moral justification for what I do, I probably wouldn't be looking for moral justification for what I do. But if I was, I would say, look, what I have done is I have facilitated an arrangement whereby the Russian Federation provide my federation with some investment, and in exchange we will vote for them to host the World Cup in 2018. And as a consequence of this facilitation, I'm being charged a fee. I'm being given a fee, and the fee is considerable. And it's tax free. It's coming in the form of a gift because I don't agree with the and so therefore it's fine. That's all it is. It's a facilitation fee. It's not a bribe. It's not a bun. And that's
totally above.
It's totally above. There's nothing wrong with it. I do feel that us English have benefited over hundreds of years of the British Empire negotiating trade agreements using similar tactics. And indeed, you know, negotiating trade agreements at the point of a gun, if you go back far enough. So I think we're the last people on the planet to be crowing about this sort of thing. I think that probably all that's happened is that we just haven't got with the particular programme. And as Ian Holloway said, perhaps albeit, you know, in a very, very basic manner, it would have helped if we'd taken that 15 million quid that we spent on the bid, tucked it in a few envelopes and started spreading it around a little bit and see what happened then. And I'm pretty sure he's probably right in the respect we probably would have got more votes. But I don't think it happens like that. I don't think it is, you know, we're not. This isn't the 70s. I don't meet up in service stations in neon, you know, and hand over, you know, brown paper envelopes full of cash. If anything, it's far more legitimised than that. I think that and I suspect, although I don't know too much about the nature of the bid there, so I stand to be corrected, but I suspect the Americans as well, just simply got caught on the hop. So our notions of these kind of negotiations differs from the Russians, differs from the Qataris, and differs from FIFA's.
It's interesting, kind of touching on that a little bit there. There's a very good article. There's many, many good articles actually written. The football blogosphere should be proud of itself, I think, for some of the great output that's been produced over the last few days on Pitch Invasion. Andrew Guest wrote an article all about this whole thing about, you know, the investigations that were done and the whole thing about the bid bribery and the fact that money is changing hands in exchange for developing football in certain countries, and he raised a very good point that this term of, you know, developing the game can actually cover a multitude of sins. You know, it can be, you know, developing a game in a I don't know, deprived part of Africa could be, you know, dropping off a bag full of 25 footballs and saying, there you go, get on with it, as opposed to building a football academy or whatever. I mean, there's just, you know, the FIFA, what it wants to be, can be incredibly vague, can't it? I mean, it's just, you know, the way that money can supposedly change hands for decent purposes, when actually, you know, it couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't think that FIFA have a problem. They're not separating one form of payment from another. They don't see they don't see it as a kind of evil, as something that's wrong or bad practice or something that you shouldn't do. They don't think that it's a bad idea to spend money in one area and then give somebody money for making it happen. And I don't think they see themselves. I think they see themselves as do-gooders. I genuinely think Sepp Blatter sees himself as a peacemonger. I mean, he sees himself as a man who's inflicting and attempting to impose Western liberal ideologies in the areas of the world where they don't actually exist at the moment. In Russia, and particularly in Qatar. And Qatar will have to make some changes to their laws you know, in order to suit the World Cup, and it's a form of Western imperialism, frankly. Well, to be able to tell these people, you realise you're going to have to let gays in now, which is a colossally naive, I suspect, sort of like attitude towards the Qataris. But it's the first thing, them and their human rights record, that was as if we've got any right to judge people. Yeah.
As I pointed out on Twitter, is the fact that how quickly do you think it was before Budweiser got on the phone to Sepp after the announcement that Qatar had won it? Said, Sepp, how are we going to be branded over?
And just to kind of extend your Twitter message, you put Budweiser official cough syrup of the 2022 World Cup or whatever it was.
It works very well with Qatar as well, of course. It was superb. Obviously, this would have all been squared off with the official partners before. I'm sure the bid was even considered, and they probably would have said, "Well, look, of course, so there will be people outside of, you know, England and the US, and outside, I suspect, of a lot of Western Europe, that will see what Blatter is doing is a good thing. He's spreading the good word, and he's also carrying a fair amount of what they would regard as good politics with it as well. I mean, the more you think about it, the more insane you can drive yourself. But that is, you know, there's two sides to this. There's another side to this, and it isn't necessarily bad. I don't particularly have an issue with the fact that with the Russians of how they've managed to get it, to be perfectly honest with you, because that's the game that we play. And if people want it to change, and if that's the way that they want FIFA to change, then that's fine. But I have yet to see anybody actually come up with what I would regard as a coherent alternative. You know, there's various Facebook groups that have started themselves up and Twitter accounts saying, you know, change FIFA, you know, so the revolution starts here. It's all like, well, you know, what do you intend to do?
It ends there as well.
Yeah. How do I know that you're not just a front for Rupert Murdoch, who's trying to sort of what are we trying to do here? We just surrender control from, you know, take control from one bunch
of tyrants to another. Yeah.
To another, yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, I must admit, in the immediately after the whole thing was announced, I kind of churlishly sort of said to myself, well, you know, what's needed now is to set up an alternative to FIFA, and kind of laughed to myself, like, as if to sort of say, as if that could happen. And then promptly sort of switched on the radio various times and TV several times in the next sort of day or two, and heard other people suggesting exactly the same thing. But they were serious about it, whereas I was kind of sort of being a rather kind of flippant, frankly. Yeah. And it is. I mean, not that it's a feasible solution to set up an alternative. But my God, it's going to be a hell of a job to try and change FIFA's ways from the inside.
Puerile, isn't it? A pathetic, you know, childish reaction to something that's happened. You've lost, you know, and the only way that we can react to losing is by trying to sort of like take the ball away. It's just utterly infantile.
Well, and it does bring the whole thing. It's like the FA. It's like the when people moan about the FA, and then all of a sudden you think, well, you know, they're not a public body.
No,
They're not accountable to anyone.
Not to anybody.
They're only accountable to themselves. And you know, you can't just go around, oh, this is an outrage, because when you think, well, no, if they're writing the rules, you've got to play by them.
Yeah.
There is no other.
And option. If you don't like it, then you don't play at all.
Yeah.
End of story.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you.
And it was only after we lost the bid that the guy who actually organised the old Andy Anson was sitting there. Yeah, don't bother doing it because it's rubbish.
Yeah. I mean, very noble.
I know it's easy to say things with the benefit of, like, you know, hindsight, but it's also easy to say it with the benefit of foresight. You know, they should never have gone into that room.
No, indeed. As I say, it's all very noble of him to sort of say, "Yeah, well, I'm jacking this in because, you know, those FIFA people, you can't trust them." Mm. I thought, and you couldn't work that one out in the time that you've been in your current position. All this time, have you never stopped to think, man? Yeah. God, I mean, I'm a bit sort of slow on the uptake sometimes, but crikey, Moses!
You shake your hand with any one of those people around that table. You're going to count your fingers afterwards, aren't you?
It's quite actually funny, all this whole kind of reaction of, like, as you say, Terry, you know, taking the ball away and all that. It's quite amusing seeing how people here in England are kind of reacting to it, in a sense of, right, that's the last time I kind of deal with you. You've got Boris Johnson, who has now withdrawn his offer of a free stay at the Dorchester for people from FIFA visiting the 2012 Olympics. It's like, you can't stay at our hotel. You piss off, you.
I don't mind an element of that. I mean, I think that there's got to be degrees. I just think walking away from FIFA even talking about it is monumentally stupid, because it will totally ruin the game in there. But I mean, you know, I mean, you're telling them to get fucked. There's nothing wrong with that, you know. So no, you can't come over here. I mean, I was thinking earlier on, you know. It's a shame that this didn't happen in the good old days when Tony Blair and Alistair Campbell were running the show. Otherwise, Sepp Blatter would probably find himself face down in a ditch somewhere, you know. The BBC would be found responsible after an inquiry by Lord Hutton or something like that, you know.
Yeah. And then a cable would show up on WikiLeaks and tell everyone that. Exactly.
Yeah, but it would be too late by then, because the damage would have been done. You know, but no, yeah. they're namby-pamby Tories. Sort of like, no, they don't take their revenge in this manner. It's, I just think that, I think that the best thing that England could do right now is to try and see about getting together a bid for the Euro 2020 championships.
Well, that's funny you say that, because I've got now this amazing kind of admiration for the French now, because they've just completely body swerved the whole thing and gone, we're going to go in for the next European championships, and I've got it.
Did you read read the story about in the Independent, what Sam Wallace reported, that I believe that Platini voted for Qatar on the basis that the Qatar government are currently negotiating with the French government a £10 billion investment programme in French nuclear fuel. It may be that the French just said, you know what, we're just going to back out of this whole thing altogether and just, you know, go for something that we think that we can get and maybe that there might be some political capital to be gained by England, maybe some sympathy. I do know, reading a lot of the German press over the last few days, there's a lot of sympathy out there for the English. And I think, in fairness, there's a lot of deserved sympathy out there. I think, you know, they've clearly been lied to by people, and they've clearly been treated shoddily. You know, I think that there's an element of sympathy there, just not much. So I think there's a possibility that we could go for that. And I'd like to think that we would take some positives out of that and try and refocus ourselves on our own national team. See if we can't win the World Cup in 2018 and shove that trophy up, you know, Sepp Blatter's ring piece.
Funny you mentioned the reaction in the German press. It was quite amusing reading. Apparently, El País, the Spanish newspaper, they were reflecting on their failed bid with Portugal, and they said that their bid wasn't helped by the Spanish Football Federation president greeting the Prime Minister of Spain in his presentation and forgetting to add the words "and Portugal." So I've conveniently forgotten that we're actually in this with another country. Yes, knocked a few points off their bid, I think. But it's just, I mean, in terms of the whole, the criteria, I mean, apart from the kind of underlying criteria that actually just FIFA were just prepared to take whoever, you know, bids from whoever had the most money put in front of them. There is this whole issue about, yeah, you know, they're trying to supposedly develop the game in parts of the world that maybe haven't seen a World Cup or whatever, and that's fine. But there is this whole issue of, like, maybe they should have actually mentioned that in the first place before countries started bidding. I mean, it is quite ridiculous, really, in a way that, you know, countries like England and Portugal, Spain and so on and so forth can be allowed to sort of spend, in England's case, 15 million quid, only to sort of find out, so you're going for countries that, you know, that need to have a World Cup because they never had one. Why didn't you tell us that?
It's difficult, though, Chris. I mean, how do you tell people that you're roommate? Do you know what I mean? I mean, you can't really say, how do you say to somebody, well, look, actually, you're just here to make up the numbers. So what I would advise you do is you just, you know, have a nice low-key bid. Don't get too excited about it, you know, because, frankly, you're not going to win. I mean, they're not going to do that, are they?
Well, I'm just thinking way back in, like, you know, at the very start of the whole sort of bid procedure 2 years ago or whatever, just to sort of say, just so you know if you've had a World Cup before, or if you've got a booming, kind of, you know, football community in your country, then probably wise that you don't bother.
Well, but yeah, just... or else if you're not a major exporter of oil and gas, don't bother. I think that's probably more likely. I mean, like, you look at Qatar. I mean, like Russia, fine, they're a huge country. They've got the football is really big there, and they've got, like, all right, a lot of their stadiums are a bit falling apart a bit, but in other areas there's lots of investment going on in football. Questionable investment, but there is investment going on. But you look at Qatar, and I'm sorry, you've got a country that is a population of something like a million and a half or
one,
something?
1.7 million.
Just over a million.
Right, yeah. So...
Less
so
than Uruguay.
Yeah, I mean, but also as well, I mean, like, you know, they're hosting the Asia Cup in January. Yep. And at the moment... they've got four venues in Doha and one in El Rayyan. And that's it. Like the they've only got one stadium there that's got 50,000. The other four stadiums, I think the maximum, I think they're all under 30,000, all the other ones are. So, you know, to get 32,000, to get 32 teams there. I don't know how many venues did they have in South Africa. Was it a dozen? Was it 10?
Something like that, wasn't it? It's got to be, I reckon. 10, 12.
So what? How many is Doha going to have? Is it going to have is it going to have eight stadiums all lined up on the beach? I mean, just all of them just there.
I think what they're going to do is they're going to build them on stilts, maybe. One above
A big multi-story stadium. Oh, so
one
so
above the other.
All the fans are going to be based in two cities.
I think I wrote an Onion Bag article like that about a year or so ago, actually.
It is a baffling concept. I mean, we'll see how well they've got, as I say, they've got the Asia Cup there, and I think there's 16 teams in that. So, you know, that's going to be quite a good... But these 16 teams are not going to be bringing the same amount of fans that the Dutch will bring.
No,
but the English will bring.
Oh, no.
There's God knows how many English people out there anyway.
So it's going to be like a sort of World Cup Vegas, isn't it? It's just going to be the whole place is just going to just become a big World Cup city, with everybody just descending upon it, you know, in one place for a month, and then it was the World Soccer Editor who summed it up. They're going to be. It's going to be like a big top, and it's just going to go, and then it's going to be dismantled, and it's going to be scattered, and recycled into areas of into other countries, into apparently developing nations. They're going to be benefiting from the actual physical infrastructure that's been constructed and built there, which arguably is no bad thing.
Is that like that Simpsons episode where they used the monorail from the World Fair in 1956?
It could be. I mean, if Leonard Nimoy turns up to open the World Cup, then frankly, I changed my mind. Did I? My work here is done.
Does anyone want sausages?
Thing is. Graham, I'll aim this one at. I mean, there's been all this sort of talk about, as Terry said earlier on, about the freedom of the press in places like Russia and la-di-da-di-da, all this other stuff going on. But actually, it's been the role of the press in England that's been somewhat to the fore, hasn't it, since this whole Panorama issue. As we know, Panorama brought up all these sort of stories dredged up from before and added a little bit of extra sort of to it, a few extra sort of allegations. But, you know, the people at the FA... If no one else have been quite keen to sort of say if England had won the bid and got the chance to host the 2018 World Cup, actually the press would have done a good job, quite a thorough job in actually promoting the World Cup and for, you know, for all its positive aspects right around the world. Is that something you subscribe to?
No, not really. I think you've only got to look at the Olympics to know that that's not necessarily the case. I think most of a lot of the press have delighted in jumping on the negative aspects of the Olympics, how much it's going to cost, who's paying for it, the upheaval of local residents, and this whole deal about legacy systems that have been in place, and all these promises that people make when they make bids. suddenly come back and like hit him in the face when the money starts drying up. And of course, it's perfect grist in the mill for all the press. I think that was half the problem when the bid didn't come off, and the press were all very supportive of the bid and say, "Oh, this is terrible that we haven't got this because we've got nothing to talk about in the next 8 years."
Yeah. On the other hand, we have now got some qualifiers to look forward to.
Yes,
this is true.
The thing that kind of I'd struggle to get my head around is just the fact that whenever, of course, England qualify for World Cup, then it's even sometimes before that, as we've already seen, it's, of course, it's the English press that try to undo all the kind of stability in the squad and so on and so forth. So I can't quite work out, like, just to what extent the English press is a good, is a positive force.
Chris, this is all in the public interest. I mean, if these people are going to present themselves as celebrities and like role models for children, then surely we should know if they're snorting coke and or sleeping with
bunking up with their mates'
ex-girlfriends.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I wish I hadn't. wish I'd seen it like that before. It would have been so much more clearer to me.
And of course, it sells newspapers. People want to read about this crap. So come on.
Yeah. I mean, that is perhaps the other aspect of it. There is perhaps a commercial interest now in going after FIFA, and it may well be that the English press will decide that they're going to go after FIFA and start, you know, trying to uncover various instances of corruption and bribery, apparent corruption and bribery. But I mean, Andrew Jemmings has been doing it for 12 years, and you know, he hasn't really, on balance, had a great deal to show for it. So,
well, no, basically, this was the problem with Panorama is that whole show was based on one Excel document he had, and there wasn't really a lot of corroboration for that Excel document with people's names and initials saying, look, this is obviously a payment to him, isn't it? It's obviously a payment for this, that, and the other, and there was precious little to back it up with.
Seemed a bit tenuous.
It did seem very, very tenuous. But I mean, it's, you know, obviously, like, you know, he's been looking at it for 12 years, so he's obviously knows that you know, and yeah, everyone knows that it stinks. But you know, it's obviously the fact that no one cares that it stinks. I think that's probably gives him so more indignation than anything else, is the fact that a dodgy organisation is getting away with making a lot of money in Switzerland. Well, duh.
Yeah, everyone's so apathetic about the whole bloody thing, yeah. Okay, do you know what? I think we should probably draw a line under things there and call that a day, actually. I think we've discussed all the important stuff, so a usual request that if you want to contribute to the conversation, feel free to do so. You can listen out to all our contact details at the end. We've got a Facebook fan page. Get to us on footballfairground.com, etc., etc., etc. If you've got a view, anything you'd like to contribute, please feel free to drop us a line. That's it for this week, except just to point you in the direction of an event which is going on, Wednesday the 15th of December. Let's just give you the full date. It's the NOPA Awards, Not 100% Accurate Awards for Football Bloggers. It's basically an award ceremony for people doing good stuff in the field of football blogging and indeed podcasting. Not that we'll be there in a, you know, I don't think we're going to win anything.
No, we're not.
Sorry.
We're not.
Sorry, lost it there for a moment. But if you'd like to go along and attend this unique event, you certainly can do. Tickets are available, £20 each they are, and the money goes towards a good cause, the charity that's associated with the NOPA Awards. Does anyone know what the address is? I should have checked this before I come on. Is it not 100%accurate.com?
I believe that's
I may even have it
we'll
on
put
my
it
screen.
Up on the website.
And I'll be providing a link on the Sound of Football webpage.
Yes, it is. It is not 100. 100 as a figure. percentaccurate.com, and you'll see all the banners on there for the Not 100% Awards for football bloggers. So get along there. It's an event going on in London next Wednesday. It'll be a fantastic night, I think, and some people will be rightly rewarded for their good work in blogging. I think for now that's all, unless, gentlemen, you have anything you'd like to add before we go?
No,
I don't think so.
Right, jolly good then. Let's get our coats. Thank you very much indeed for listening. Hope you can join us again next week. Until then, from myself, from Terry, and from Graham, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
Contact us via our website at footballfairground.com Alternatively, we've got a Facebook fan page, which is facebook.com/soundoffootball, and we're on Twitter at twitter.com/soundoffootball.